So in 1981, I was making friends with a great astrologer, Jim Lewis, and we were looking through the ephemeris, the listing of planets, right? And he said, whoa, look at 2020. Oh my God, it's the age of Capricorn. And we go, oh. And we both said, we wonder what form the cauldron of death and rebirth will take, do you suppose? Ah, well, so it's many, of course, and it's all one story, which is part of the, you know, Bioneer's tracking. It's all related, no isolated crises, crisis of isolation, there we go. So the second century medical writers wrote that pandemics occur when tyrants are in power. We go, oh, alrighty, okay. So there's many cauldrons, right? There's the cauldron of the earth burning. There's the pandemic cauldron, which is, you know, how do we cooperate and how have humans cooperated with pandemics? Well, not very well, for 2000 years, right? and I love, in Barbara Tuchman's book, Distant Mirror on the 14th century, she said, the saying was that none of the village idiots got infected. And as an astrologer friend of mine said, well, we're all safe here then. But it is the dynamic of, you know, contagion spreads on the wings of fear is a saying. However, we're also in this maelstrom of crackpot theories and all kinds of things that we want our standards of discernment. So boundaries are good. Mm. And you know, we're all assigned the task of, you know, what is it to be a good citizen globally, you know, on this earth. And astrology is such a wonderful language of that, in which, you know, so much guiding wisdom has been embedded, right? These symbolic languages of collaborative kinship, you know. So Aquarius is our interior community and our external community, and then our external community of all beings. And it's called ruled by antique language, you know, Saturn, boundaries and constraint, and Uranus, freedom, trickster ingenuity, and it's always a dance, right? So the crazy, you know, people are like, no masks or whatever. And I go, well, you know, it's like when I went to pick up my puppies, great little beings, and they'd never had a leash on, right? And when I put the leash on, like all the light went out of their eyes, and they're like, ooh. And I had to give them a story. I go, no, it's a constraint that's going to lead to greater freedom. And they're like, oh, we're okay with that, right? So everybody needs a story, the dogs and the everything, the stories, the whatever. And, you know, so that's what I'm kind of putting out, going, it's a constraint that leads to greater community well-being. Come on, team, right? And so this introversion, and of course, America is now a pariah nation, right? Trump's built a wall around us and we get to pay for it. But even if this weren't, right, and I do approve of flying across the country to go to the ocean. I do. But in kind of putting our, you know, like different groups and festivals and whatnot had said, you know, come in October. And I was like, no, I think it's good to have nothing externally demanding at this point. So but story crafting. So many planets representing parts of our psyche are, you know, inward, retrograde now, retrograde, right through the election. So even if it weren't, I mean, if we were a responsive race, we would go, time for introspection, clarity, pulling in, dedication, you know, what a good idea to gather our strategy wits, right? So so I remember 1981, Jim Lewis saying that thing, and then I also remember 2016, when as part of Pacifica's reporting team and my own Coyote Network News, I went to both conventions. And I remember stepping out of the Republican convention where I had a pretty interesting time. I mean, testing this thing about crossing borders and spiraling out of polarity. And one-on-one, I found the Republicans more playful than the Democrats in a weird way. It's the confidence. I found this in a weird way. The confidence of conservatives, educated conservatives, really, allows them to actually have a conversation. Whereas some kind of muggle liberals so worried that they would look silly to Harvard, you know, it's like, no, can't engage in metaphysics. But so one-on-one, the Republican convention was, you know, worthy play and great trickster training in the streets. I want to come back to that. But as a group, it was like Shirley Jackson's The Lottery. I mean, it was mob mind. And when I left, I knew what was going to happen. And I sank to my knees under the stars. And I was like, oh God, we're getting smoked on what should be our strong suit, the power of story and the power of symbols. And it was like, and Hillary has no story craft. Oh no, we're going to get, because Trump was saying, I will give to you your greatest dream you've had since you were born. And just, and see, the model is because of our mythological illiteracy that we want to become literate. You know, so the Venus, we know that cultures symbolically embedded their science in their myths and fairy tales. So the Inanna myth is the Venus astronomical cycle. And so Venus will be the evening star for 9 months-ish, you know, and as she was in the spring for us. And then she gets so close to the sun that we don't see her, called Venus going to the underworld. And then she rises, it's called the heliacal rise of Venus as the morning star. That's what you could see at 4:47 in the morning. Ah, so bright, she's back. All cultures observe this cycle. In the West, it's Inanna. In Mesoamerica, it's Quetzalcoatl. And the Quetzalcoatl myth is that Quetzalcoatl is a pretty okay leader. And then Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of, I'll help you spell that, right? The Lord of the Smoking Mirror comes to him with the whispers of corruption, right? And says, you're getting old, you need this and that, and, you know, rules don't apply to you, and, you know, make a deal with Monsanto. And so Quetzalcoatl does all kinds of horrible things, and he wakes up feeling terrible and sails away, right, going to the underworld. And in Mayan or Mesoamerican, it would be understood this is the time to reinvent leadership. It's become corrupt, it's gone away. And it was a horrible quirk that on the heliacal rise moment when Quetzalcoatl was to return, that's when Cortez arrived. And they mistook the man for a god. And it's like, oh, no. And during the Republican convention, we were in that cycle, you know, and they mistook Trump for Quetzalcoatl. And it's like, no, it's a myth. It's a metaphor that's meant to be in all of us. Oh, no. But you could feel that, right? And so that's why, you know, mythological literacy is important, going, this is what, no, not a human. No, it's to be born in each person's heart. There we go. But also in the West, you know, Inanna, the myth from 3,500 years ago, you know, and anybody who is anybody goes to the underworld, and we're all in the underworld in our own way. And so the rape and kidnapping motifs are way, way late. It was always an initiatory descent. You know, at the Eleusinian Mysteries, everybody saw Persephone having gone down a maiden, returning a bleeping initiated queen. Just poof. Same deal. A puer boy, even if he's 60, you know, would go down into the underworld to scrape off, you know, the immaturity and arise a wizard, right? So we're all in this now, right? I mean, it's like, all right, scrape off all the things, the underworld spa service, So, but in the Inanna myth, so she goes to the underworld, many versions of how and why, and it's very rich, but she returns, right, the heliacal rise, And that's when she becomes a trickster, right? And you may have heard me say this because I love it so much, but it's where we are in the cycle now. And the Sumerian poetry, very trippy, says she's recovering from her ordeal. And one day she's contemplating the wonders of her own vulva, going, ah, it is fantastic to be a woman, even if you don't have a guy, it's just really great. And that's when here comes trickster Uranus ingenuity. The idea into her receptive vulva realm, right? Which is, it's all kind of being staged now, really, in a great way. She is awakened by a trickster impulse that's going to be good for everybody. And she goes, I know, for my overland adventure, I'm going to rescue human culture. And human culture has been stolen by Enki, the god of wisdom, who has become a tyrant. Very sophisticated of the Sumerians to remind us, anyone unchallenged, right, trickster challenges, will become tyrannical. Harvard, the thing, gurus, anybody, right? So the trickster service is to playfully challenge with the dedication to be liberating, ideally, right? So Inanna and her best girlfriend, they sail to Enki's island, and being a Venusian liberating trickster, she doesn't go grr, right? She gets Enki drunk on beauty and poetry. And as he gets drunk on beauty and poetry, he gives back to her these parts of human culture called Mies. And it's also very important that the Sumerians are so guiding because everything's trying to help us out now. They say when Enki stole culture, he left empty celebrity baubles in its place. Pretty much like that. It's very clever, toxic mimics, right? So anyway, so Inanna gets him drunk. He gives back to her, you know, astronomy, astrology, writing, science, real estate, you know, whatever. She puts it all in her boat and sets sail with her friend, her little woven round coracle. And Enki wakes up in the morning and goes, where is human culture? I know I left it here somewhere. And his assistant says, you got drunk. You got out drunk. And there's Inanna, Venus, us may it be, you know, on the horizon in her little coracle. So he does send demons after her. But she's so exhilarated by the friendship and the triumph and whatever that she fends them off with alacrity. And that's how Venus, Inanna, brings culture back to humans, and then they can have a wise renaissance of cooperating with nature. Not intentional, right? So that's the 3,500-year-old myth now. I mean, everything reporting in. And so, in like a myth or a dream, you know, we get to be all the characters. There's an Enki part of all of us that's like, you know, certainty, knows best. I will hoard this over here, you know. And I think, excuse me, I'm choked up by the Inanna myth. Here, more coffee. But I think it's, there's the horrific and beautiful altruism of so many now, you know, on the front lines and doing so much good and so much suffering. I saw this great kung fu movie, Judge D and the Heavenly Kings, and it was like, oh, well, whatever. But then it was fabulous at the end. Let me see, actually, I think I even have my notes from it, because it's like, you never know these unexpected sources of whatever. So it was a kung fu movie, and I'm like, whatever. But then, deep trickster redemption at the end. I really, the Taoist, authentic Taoist with his humble slippers arrives and said, you know, hell is full of suffering souls, so enlightenment can wait. And it's the demons and the bad humans and the scary murderous beings are there, and the Taoist is very kind of calm, you know, and the evil bad villain, you know, throws this thing in a prison, surrounds the Taoist's head, and immediately there's an iron prison around all of the Dementor's head too. And and the Taoist said, hatred is endless. You know, life is infinite and precious. Why would we allow hatred to contaminate it? Inner demons urge us to, you know, expel them from our hearts and the weapon will open. And it's this great moment where the demons and the bad guys fall to their knees in remorse, right? And the prisons leap off of their heads. Anyway, it's just really great. Expel them from our hearts and the weapon will fall open. So it's like, thank you, Kung Fu Movie, wisdom reporting in from everywhere. And that's kind of the trickster dynamic, is it's like the trickster part of all of us called to engagement is interested in liberating, you know, women, you know, men, the land, liberating the entire circumstance, right? Not counting on it, but willing. And so that was such a great smoke and animation of that. And then the Taoist also said, you know, it's a great thing. I don't have the exact thing, but he says, I didn't realize the situation was so dangerous. Sorry, I'm late. I'm like, right. Come on. We need help. We've really messed up. You know, come on in, you know, but, again, these kind of crucial lessons and, the evolutionary spookiness is the Dementors are just so reliably, horrifically cruel and churlish, you know, monstrosities running on cruelty, and they do horrible things which make us but they feed on polarity, right? They feed on the polarity. So how shall we spiral? And I think that's where all of our inner dedication, you know, and humility is required. You know, just even in a simple way, you know, the inward dedication magnetizes the outward path. You know, just even, you know, dance us into place where we can do the most good, have the most fun, contribute our gifts to the community in a way that is replenishing. That'll do. I think that'll do. So, right. So, feel free to guide.
I can keep
rambling. So my love, right, and what I'm doing increasingly more is language crafting for individuals, for groups, for nonprofits, for whatever, going, language is magic. You know, it's one of the great skills of intimate collaboration. You know, if we have a name, we have a relationship, and anything we can name, we can. So I'm, you know, with self and others, interested in how we can unbespell ourselves, you know, and, you know, it's like I do a lot of, or, you know, work when there were, you know, huge gatherings. Well, there are huge gatherings. I'm sort of sitting those out going, yes, I have my fill of tear gas. Thank you for carrying on, full Wolfie support, whatever we can do from our different assignments. You know, but a lot of times, you know, and the Women's March, really, really great, really great. And the, but the, on the stage, the language is, you know, let's support these people's long, hard struggle. I go, I want to support their effective dedication, right? Mm-hmm. Because whatever we say, we got more of it. It's like, they want more struggle. It's like, no, we want effective dedication. Just to play. And working with so many people, you know, I do personal consultings and business and everything consultings. And so people go, well, I've been struggling with this issue for years. And I go, well, let's see what it feels like if we take the word struggle and put it into the giant death rebirth cauldron available to us all and replace it with the word dancing. You know, I've been dancing with this issue for years. And it's like, oh, well then, you know, then you can spiral. Then, you know, as opposed to dun dun dun, dun, you know, right. And so, I'm also, you know, we have these obedience memes. I'm really interested in how prison can masquerade as freedom because everybody's so interested in not being snookered. So, you know, the word impact is a pandemic, right? Impact investing and want to impact. And I go, really? You want to have a short, violent encounter. Is that what you're up to? How about a long, curvy influence? You know, influential. Influence is a word that comes from astrology, actually. It's the inflowing, you know, of the guiding intelligence, right? So how about influence? And it's just autonomy is a sacrament, and I like to say to myself and others, you know, Johannes Trickster says, we are big forces of nature's intelligence dancing with you personally and collectively. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice as opposed to conditioned snookering, right? So the lineup that Jim Lewis was referring to in 81 that we is what's called the Saturn Pluto, the cauldron of death and rebirth, Jupiter, teasing all knowledge, all practices into, well, practices actually, everything we've ever practiced, every word or whatever in the underworld is where you go, well, let's work this, let's do this thing. Magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything, not condone, right? But to dance and spiral with the thing. And redemption lies in brewing medicine for others, right? So it's like, all right, let's play with this thing here. And it's challenging because I don't want to impose, you know, finger wagging on people's finger wagging or whatever. But you know, so it's if people want to woof woof want to play, it's like, all right, language crafting, and that's our metaphors. You know, when people say, I'm so sick and tired of this administration, it's like, oh no, don't do that. Don't, no sense doing their work for them. You know, I'm so aroused into ingenious action. You know, it's like, let's, you know, not sick and tired into the cauldron. So Pluto gives us this great cauldron of death and rebirth, and it's only good for everything to get thrown in. I think it's good for festivals to redesign themselves and for conferences. Bioneers, you know, festival into the cauldron and what shall we ladle out? But also everything into the cauldron, tired language. You know, Trickster says there's no prison for the unexpected. I've test driven these things. I know it's true. When we use expected language, there's already a prison waiting for it. But the original language liberates everybody into a fresh conversation. And I think talking across borders to people that we compost contempt, right? We just gotta compost contempt. Before conversation can happen. And then play. Woof woof wanna play. And sometimes people don't, but sometimes they do. And I remember I was talking to a Trump supporter guy and going, oh, you know, and so then I said, well, what's your definition of the purpose of government? And he's like, oh, see, if we ask, you're unexpected, it only takes, you know, one person to change the circle into like, whoa. And then I said, well, let's just chant it together. The purpose of government is to, and we both said together, protect the Commonwealth. He said it. And I was like, damn, let's quit now while we're ahead. That's good. That was really good. I'll be going swimming now. There we go. Okay. So, thank you very much. Thank you very much for this dance. Right. And so our repertoire of responses and fresh responses, and our that everything be critique, diving deep into the funky horror, with liberating blessing. But it doesn't have to be boring, right? It can be spicy and sizzly and dark humored, and but with a fundamental liberating wish. So one of the things I play with, you know, in different venues, online things. I have a Monday Night Trickster Council and different venues and language crafting things and whatever is, you know, something I was about to say. Oh, well, all right. So, well, let me pause and you, let me pause. And you, what was I about to say? I don't know.
Well, something that's coming up in the Monday night, something that you've been playing with online, and it was actually a question that was emerging. And so I think this is what you were naturally going to dive into, if I'm right, but we'll see, which is that I'm curious, when you are face to face with someone, like at the Republican convention, it seems like the the possibility for play is so alive. But sometimes in the online spaces, we can just be so hostile to one another, and the yeah. energetic is different. So I'm so curious, in this time of the pandemic, how do you do Wolf Wolf Wanna Play?
Right. No, that's good, right? And it's deep practice, right? Because the comment section is like the lower astral of human devolution often. you know, and you can feel, you know, in social media, because I do Facebook and Twitter, you know, but you can feel the collective weather going, oh, it's changing now, it's getting very polar, you know, back away from the screen. No, don't react, respond. Right. But don't react. Don't react to that, or you're no. Right. And we all blow it. We all blow it. Going, oh. You know, and Trickster, you know, says sometimes you have to cross the line to know where it is. Right. But I've been, you know, practicing. Right. And so sometimes when, you know, I'm honing, but then aspiring to go, may it be spicy, but fundamentally liberating. Like somebody was like just doing whatever, and I was like, and they're like, oh, I can't remember exactly the precise, but I was like playing with their words, going, then may a cheerful gothic wind emerge from the underworld and sweep all the fuzzy thinking out of your brain and leave you with linguistic vitality, right? And they were like, oh, that's really cool. so when people take it, you know, it's like when you cross the line, you know, and then people are like, woof woof, it's like, that's the best. That's just the, and sometimes, you know, and then also really practicing, because, you know, I know a lot of sane people who are just, you know, just piling on what I think of as crackpot. I'm going to use that word, crackpot videos. You know, and I was like, oh, Jesus, you know, do I just block them or whatever? And it's like, no, well, let's see, let's practice. You know, and then there's, you know, the trick looks for an opening, you know, somebody who was like, whatever, said, just was like, blah, 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 and, you know, the virus is a hoax, and no, you know, it's like, and then they mentioned some astrology thing that they were born with Jupiter in Cancer. I'm like, oh, first, you know, what I've learned in toxic situations online and off is there is no communication or conversation possible while there's condescension or contempt, right? Yeah. And condescending means we all go down together. And it's actually a quite colonial, tyrannical thing, no matter how hip we think we are. So I do aspire, you know, before the reaction to, you know, we all have a harumphitude composter, like compost, harumphitude, aspire to be like the Taoist, you know, hell is full of suffering, enlightenment can wait, and then proceed. So with this little opening, I go, Jupiter in Cancer, it's called exalted, you know, because Cancer is providing nourishment and Jupiter is stories. And in the Arabian Nights, it says people need stories more than they need bread. And the person was like, yes, that's so important in my life. And we were in a different conversation. Uh-huh. We were no longer, you know, it's a hoax. We were leaving the hoax situation. And it starts to come in again, like with the guy, I go, we've been having an excellent time. I'm going to back away now. We've been getting on so well. I'm going to draw the curtain of discretion while you rant about, you know, the thing. Right. And so finding that spiral. And I think it's really important for our progressive team or whatever, because there's a lot of sneaky condescension.
Oh my God.
If you knew what I knew, you would know there's no hope and it's all corrupt. It's like, we do know what you do and more, but we're not bleeping muggles, you condescending dingbat. Let me compost my harumphitude. Right. So yeah, so there's a lot of I step in a spicy way. You know, somebody was pontificating because, again, it's dodgy, right? Somebody was, you know, a progressive was like, and this is terrible, and they, no, you can't vote for Biden, and people knew what whatever it was, you know, and you know, it's the system that's corrupt, and unless you know that, you know, what's the thing, then nothing. And I go, well, we do know that, you know, and you know, and there's a flag on that play, projectile platitudes, condescending imposition, inadvertent support of tyranny and colonialism, 5-yard penalty, declined, ball back in play. Right. Anyway, yeah. So I don't know how that person took it, but a lot of other people were like, yes, thank you. That's really good. Okay. So we do want to have fun with it. and it can be a little dodgy. But I think it's, you know, everybody's got their different style and we're all honing, but I like the criterion, you know, in this death rebirth cauldron, everything can be imprisoning or liberating, everything. You know, astrology, you know, and that's where we find our team. You know, I love Renaissance astrologer Marsilio Ficino. You know, we find our allies in history, and it's a good time to do that, going, help us. And I love him because he was always berating the astrologers of Florence for creating a priesthood. You know, may I buy real estate? You know, yes, you may. Well, so, and this is really important, the imprisoning or liberating quality of everything. It's a Saturn theme, meaning we are any liberating teaching, everything into the cauldron, all teachings, all festivals, all everything going, all right. And the criterion for ladling out is, does it guide people to their own autonomy? Mm. Is it equal Mars and Venus, equal humans and the rest of our kin on this planet? Is playful truth-saying welcome? Is trickster disruption welcome? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we put it back in for another round of bubbling, right? It's not adequate if it doesn't meet those criterion, I feel. You know, and so the Saturn model, does it guide people to their own autonomy? No priesthood. No priesthood, right? Priesthood, very sneaky. You know, I mean, we've had it for, you know, whatever. And I think it's also part of, like, when did humans make the underworld a bad place? Because it's just soil. And initiatory depth and introspection that modern culture is like, no, not that, not introspection. Okay. And I think we have to go really far back to when did humans make the underworld a bad place. We have to go back to when there's a priesthood, right? When our connection to the big wolf is imprisoned into a only through a priesthood, which feeds on fear. So I think that's when we became fear-based, like, oh, underworld, dark, feminine, you know, I love Neil Douglas Klotz, Aramaic scholar, saying the Aramaic, the vernacular that Jesus would have spoken, says, when Jesus says, be as gentle as doves and as wise as serpents, he said that the word he uses for serpent is the same word for Eve and wisdom. Eve, wisdom, serpent, same word. And I go, ah, so all subjugation of the earth and women and religious wars is a translation error? And he goes, yeah, intentional translation error, but it's like, oh, Eve, wisdom, serpent, right? It's like person, man, woman, you know, camera, TV. No, Eve, wisdom, serpent. You know, I mean, I think we can animate these chants again. Eve, wisdom, serpent, something. Pick another one. Eve, wisdom, serpent. Yep, yep. Memory. So, the no priesthood, I think, is important. So that's why this beautiful language that people think of as constraining, but it's actually liberating, is about insourcing everything we've outsourced, right? Mm-hmm. So Saturn represents authority, autonomy, right? So we tend to give that away to father and to leaders and to competent people and to, you know, whatever. But it's time, this introspection is like, everybody inhale one's own autonomy, authority. You know, autonomy is a sacrament, right? To our, it's our little goat. It's our Saturn goat, right? To our hara. I mean, and these are, we're all working on this forever kind of thing. Just because authority contains the word author, and is related to the word authentic, which is our greatest protection in the underworld. And it says either we're inhaling our authority or the world is authoritarian, right? So it's for everybody to inhale Saturn, 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 boundaries, boundaries, yes, masks and distance, respect, animals and fish, social distance. In pandemics, they do. Wow. Little fish going, I'm not feeling well. I'm going to go over here. Thank you, says the school. It's like this is not some human thing. Now, with conspiracies, it's challenging. I mean, there are true conspiracies, of course, and we don't want the crackpot ones to discredit the real ones because there's a lot to track. The private outsourcing of stormtroopers, there's a lot of important things to know. And that's why, you know, how do we journey into the underworld with a jaunty heart, right? It's good to have a team, but that's why the thing I always use, these are all crucial parts of my magic backpack, you know, Inanna and detective novels, myths, fairy tales, detective novels. These all live in our mythic DNA, right? It's like the Inanna myth. You know, we know it's a crisis of leadership, not the, so somebody was we were playing backstage before presenting thing, and he said, well, and of course, you know, and everybody's looking to that one savior, and you know, of course that is, and I said, yes, it's Keanu Reeves, right? That's why the Matrix movies were a setup for Trump. Anyway, I just had to say it because I find the Matrix movies really imprisoning, and I go, it's prison masquerading in his freedom, because it's got, you know, the savior is this white boy, and it's Keanu Reeves. I'm like, no, right? So it's still feeding. I like the image of God as the Santera, the Cuban Santera in the kitchen. That was a good part of the movie. But otherwise, people are, you know, were snookered. And so, inhaling authority. Okay. So myths, fairy tales, detective novels. You've probably heard me say this too, but I use it all the time with enthusiasm. So wondering what the oldest detective novels, crime fiction, is, which is myths and fairy tales are that, you know, and it is 231 BC in China on bamboo paper are the earliest detective novels, which, like everything, are pitching to us, right? And everything wants to be translated into a fresh guiding vernacular now, you know, and for everybody to think of what do they love in terms of pragmatic teaching and science and myth and how to give it a fresh expression with a liberating heart to fuel it. So in the detective novels from 231 BC, they say, the purpose of the magistrate is to dive into the underworld in order to restore human affairs to be in accord with the mandate of heaven and earth. And they go, that's it. That's it. And they said, if you're going to do that, and we're all kind of assigned that, there's some helpful hints. They go, it's good to have a buddy or two with whom to cheat death and have dark humor. Wow. And that's what we want, because Jupiter's saying, what do you need for a wealthy life? It's like a couple of buddies who we know are seeing what we're seeing, and so it makes it funny rather than alienating, you know, and that detective novel bravado of banter, you know, banter, you know, again, Wendell Berry says, be jaunty, even though fully informed, right? So to descend into the underworld with a buddy or two. And then they say, in 231 BC, and to us, greatest protection in the underworld is authenticity. Now we're back to Saturn, which has to do with outsourced leadership and internal autonomy authority, right? And that's part of the value of this time, going, you know, to whom and what have we outsourced authority for collective well-being, and how do we inhale that back in? And using everything, you know, all forms of pragmatic mysticism. And so they said about authenticity, they said, if you're authentic, which is an all of us kind of a thing we're working on, you know, aspiring forever, that our inside and our outside match, They say, if you are authentic, then here's what will happen. Bad people will come up and go, I was going to rob you and kill you, but I can sense that you're authentic. So I want to join your team, but I have underworld skills you will need. And I find this so pertinent to us right now. We're in a great magnetizing, invitational recruiting drive. Come on over. And I talk to a lot of whistleblowers, right, who are like, you know, for 40 years we did terrible things in the NSA, but now we want to be good. And it's like, welcome. We, in the spirit of detective novels, we will keep a crafty eye on you because we because we know that your story and our story might not completely match down the line. Like, there's a lot of Republicans who are moderately sane now, and we go, welcome. And we'll, you know, we're agreeing about these things, but we're savvy, right? And, you know, so there's that, you know, the detective novel model, you know, come on over and Kahoot. Because if the Dementors, and part of what I knew what was going to happen after the Republican convention in 2016, is that they were, yeah, permission, inviting the worst aspects into collective mob mind, you know, and it's like, oh, dangerous, very dangerous. So rather than contribute, you know, our task is to invite the best, you know, come on over with a, you know, here, we got important good thing. We need the awakened imagination and ingenuity of everybody. It's a collective calling, you know, and that's why, when I left the Republican convention sinking to my knees, I thought of, we think of all of our mentors. And I thought of my kind of esoteric mentor in the 40s in England, Dion Fortune, and many great things. But so when I was a little occult student, 17, 18, you know, I read all of her stuff and there's a book called The Magical Battle of Britain. So the thought of her going, we need to activate everything. So she was a pragmatic mystic. She said, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And in World War II, the British government engaged her, and they really crafted, learned ritual esotericists to do pragmatic mysticism to protect England from the Nazis. And they did. So I read that book a long time ago, and I thought, oh, this is really important. We need everything. And so, guided by some Twitter augury, you know, somebody randomly said, reach for the book nearest you and turn to page 47. I go, okay. I slightly cheated. It's like, it's the book second over, because we're not obedient. We're trickster, not obedient. Wait, I have it here. But I've only been on page 47 for the last month, really. It's just because it's just pretty nutrient. And I go, all right, Dion. So she's writing this when the bombs are falling, and they're doing it by mail, right? They're mailing ritual instructions to all the participants in England, right? So we've got Zoom, for God's sake, But she said, if we were unable to maintain an atmosphere of serenity in our own headquarters, how could we then have hoped to be a nucleus of stability for the group soul of the nation? I'm like, now we're talking, yeah. Right? It's like, let's up our game. The group soul of the nation, anything that has a word is a participatory ally. The group soul of the nation, yeah. Let's talk to that. And then she said, the stability and serenity, you know, meditation and things, you know, maintaining, again, she's writing this in, you know, in the early 40s, bombs are falling, to allow us each to dedicate to being a nuclei of stability in a profoundly disturbed world. It's like, thank you, Dion. Now, she was not a barrel of laughs, right? I mean, I want to tricksterize everything, but everything that comes to us going, that's great, and how could we make it a little more playful? But so she said the stability also is in part due to the power of steady meditation to neutralize incoordinated vibrations, and it's also no doubt due to our certainty of the desirable outcome, of the war, right? Even as the bombs are falling, they're like, no, and I think that's for all of us now, to animate in detail the vision, right? Which has a magnetic field as well as a pragmatic, you know, we do everything we can to make it real and then invite in mojo. There was a great neurological study I ran across in my notes that said, when we commune with an invisible anything, it's the same in our brain as talking to a good friend in the kitchen. And I go, oh, I love that. This is very good news. You know, to our brain is democratic. Invisible and visible are equally real to our brain. And I go, fabulous. Thank you. You know, so what she said is, okay, so the our certainty of the desirable outcome of the war. Horrible, horrible. And then she said, I just felt like this metaphor, because the power of extended vision, you know, can see how things are going on the inner planes of causation, right? It's wonderful, antique, occult kind of British language talk, but cute. And then she said, this is not prophecy in the ordinary sense of the word, but just as a woman on a high cliff can see a ship approaching the shore sooner than those on the beach. I love that image. Love that image. You know, I find it very moving. Okay, so when we are able to perceive conditions, we can see the advent of desirable events sooner than those on the beach. Isn't that a great image?
That's so beautiful, Carolyn. I feel like you're standing on the high cliff. What is your vision for 2021?
What? I'm going to spiral out of that one because Neptune says, you know, the modern addiction to certainty, that's blown to hell, and there is no mystery. I mean, there is no certainty. But we're all crafting this. However, yeah. Now I'm very enchanted by my friend Deborah Felmuth, a longtime ally, she who lives in Syria and Vermont, right there. She's a cross-pollinating agent between, you know, Arabic world and modern. So we did a really pretty great, I think, pretty great summer solstice online, audio only, because she's like, everybody's tired of Zoom, let's just do invisible. And it's like, it was really good. But but I loved one of the great guiding things she said. She said, in Western culture, and especially American, the future's in front of us. There it is, in the past, in back of us, who cares, right? And she goes, in Arabic culture, it's the reverse, right? We love these changes. We are gazing at the past before us. And the future is an invisible mystery behind us. And the future is crafted with words and stuff. The future is crafted as we gaze at the caravan of our past mentors. I'm like, oh, that's great. That's really great. So yeah, because all this time, especially people who think astrology is nonsense, are like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I go, you know, that's just really not the question. what's available for us to cooperate with? You know, and certainly Janine Benyus and biomimicry and making wheel and deal contracts, experimental contracts backstage with what we love is definitely the way to go. And everything that's ever been important to us teased into application. So a million animal years ago, you know, when I began living with actual coyote, Stella Coyote, and was interviewing a Lakota elder on radio, and he said, nothing smarter, right? And we Lakota did not hunt alone. Those gifted would go into a reverie, right? Pragmatic mysticism, and they would broker a working alliance across species boundaries. They would broker an alliance with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture, shame people and destroy that capacity to imaginatively and then literally, imagination lays the tracks for the reality train, imaginatively then literally form an alliance, you know, and then you can destroy the world. So I'm very keen on that, you know, with Dion Fortune and Lakota and Coyote all brewing in a syncretism. And Edgar Cayce was a really true psychic in the 40s, 30s and 40s in America. Befoibled, as we all are, but for real. And he predicted in the 40s that, in the early 1970s, the East Coast of America would be deluged by a great tidal wave. And what we got was Watergate, right? So sometimes these things can be metaphoric. I'm interested in all in whom it resonates to experiment, believe nothing, entertain possibilities for people individually and maybe collectively to imaginably go backstage and go, we humans, we have set in motion horrific things and much sadness and suffering and cruelty coming at us. Can we negotiate to make some of it metaphoric, right? Mm. If we light the fires in our heart, you know, can we have fewer fires? If we honor water, can we have fewer floods? But it's a coyote wheel and deal. I learned a lot from Coyote. I learned a lot from Stella. Dogs no shame, coyotes zero shame. All wheel and deal. And this is indigenous voodoo. It's what anthropologist muggles call transactional spirituality, but I think it's really living animism and completely real. It's if this, then this. And the backstage goes, what are you putting on the table? And it's like, you know, so to all of us, like, well, what are we putting on the table? And I've seen people, I have, you know, sometimes access to quirkily, highly placed beings, right? And they're in trouble. And I go, well, you know, you're clean enough. You're cleaner than your opponents and wherever. You know, if you get out of this mess, if Trickster helps you out of this mess, what are you putting on the table? You know, and they were like, you know, oh, this and this, and we'll release these prisoners and we'll do this thing and whatever. And then they get out of trouble and they're like, well, that was just imaginary. It's like, you know, and then they get taken down. I mean, I've seen this a lot. It's like, no, it's for real. And in myself, I go, oh, what did I put on the table? You know, even in small things, like if my cat comes back, right? You know, yeah. I promise to, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, oh, I didn't completely do that. I better, you know, so, yeah. Anyway, so we're all, you know, to be authentic, you know, I can certainly, right. There's a con and a trickster in all of us. And I can, when we don't live up to our, when we overpromise and, but we're all, it's the direction that we're going in. We're all kind of, you know, befoiled in that way. But I think, yeah, so pragmatic mysticism, you know, again, this I think is the sine qua non that can work it. If with all this great knowledge and science and solutions and ingenuity and a call for more, you know, which so moves people. I just so love the Biomimicry Institute and Janine Benyus because it completely transcends any imprisoning political language because it's elegant and people, and it's full of our skill set. People don't mind being asked, did you know that the Japanese high-speed bullet train was, you know, disrupting, breaking windows as it entered and left a tunnel, you know, and they went to Janine and the Biomimicry Institute, and she goes, let's look at a kingfisher bird entering water without a splash. And so they redesigned the front of the Japanese high-speed bullet train to be like a kingfisher bird entering water with no disturbance in the field. Right. And it's like, oh, let that be one of our qualities too. May we enter into foreign venues, you know, without any disturbance in the field, you know, so stealth. But anyway, but see, everybody who sees that is like, oh, that's beautiful. Right.
Yes.
People love that. We're pattern tracking beings. We love elegance. We have an image of how things should be. And see, the beautiful language of astrology, it doesn't, you know, it exists. We don't need to, it's not something to believe in. It's a language of effective participatory kinship, god damn it. And we have 7 years of Uranus trickster in Taurus, the realm of living participatory animism. Everything's alive, you know, and how shall we cooperate with what we love? If we do this, then how about this? You know, and so I think that's, you know, so what do I see 2021? You know, it's like, okay, let's envision some desirable things, right? You know, let me see. So part of this beautiful language is to give to each part of our psyche personally and collectively, you know, represented by a planet, the work it does best. And Saturn, authority and boundaries and masks and I think is least understood. The Saturn part of us is really good at defining things, taking vows, but it's terrible at how. Well, how are we going to do that? And we go, no, how is not Saturn's job. Saturn's job is what? Jupiter and Uranus and chime in and go, we'll do how. I mean, do common sense things, right? But don't let realism be an imaginative impediment. You dedicate, and then Jupiter and Uranus go, we'll do how in a way that makes you bark with laughter. you know, this call and response, like, hello, hello, you know, from the animal emissaries and the plant emissaries, and why the resurgence of psilocybe mushrooms is so important. And when journeying in the underworld, roots, ginger root, rhodiola root, turmeric root, mycelia, mushrooms are guides to the underworld. You know, and Johns Hopkins has a, so we're in a point right now where science is proving folklore. Mm. And, you know, and I love Stamets saying that what Johns Hopkins is coming up with is what people have traditionally known about psilocybe mushrooms, microdose or more, that it calms down the amygdala, right, the flight or fight part of the brain, increases cooperation in all the regions of the brain, and encourages the cultivation of curiosity, kindness, and confidence. And as Stamets says, those are leadership qualities. And it's like, yeah. So we're all like, well, let's define leadership.
Well, good, Carolyn. I'm wondering if there's just
wrap up
the time here. Yeah. Any parting words or thoughts or trickery?
well, mentors, you know, again, we're crafting the future by gazing at our mentors, you know, and conjuring the desirable, right? You know, and willing to play. But mentors, nothing, of course, just human. You know, all the beings with whom we have affinity, and just the experiment of being willing to have a heartfelt alliance. You know, and certainly, you know, the Bioneers community and all sane herbalists and people who know, and mycologists and animals and people who live with and study wolves, you know, we want to be humbled. You know, we as a species humbled by the intelligence of the trees and plants and animals and slime mold, and, you know, going, oh, you know, we are humbled. Our word, you know, human comes from humus, dirt, from which we get humble. And humility, right? We're meant to be humble people in the dirt. We're meant to be humbled by our circumstance, not important. And there's importance into the cauldron, specialness into the cauldron, uniqueness out of the cauldron, because unique is liberating. You know, everybody who's special is kind of a condescending celebrity thing, but unique really encourages everyone to hone their own uniqueness and their own unique relationship with what they love. And I think it's, animism is not a belief, it's a manner of relating with respect. And so everything we encounter along the forest walk or on the beach, you know, you go, hello, brother, sister, crab. You know, some of us are trying to be less rude, you know, and we know that you horseshoe crabs have been the same form for 2 million years because you're perfect, you know, and we're really sorry that we've turned you into dog food, you know, and some of us are trying to be, you know, more speed it up, right? Well, what can we form an alliance, you know? And so, and I'll just leave with, I so love Jeanine Benyus and biomimicry. And the last time I hosted her on the radio, long, long, long time, but I asked her, what is this biological term, vertical integrated hierarchy? And she said, oh, it's this beautiful thing. It means that everything in nature contains the plan of the larger thing it's a part of. And this is what makes for nature's ingenuity, resilience, and self-assembling. And I go, oh, that's fabulous. And so she was always happy, very kind for me to take scientific fact and tease it into guiding metaphor, right? So for us now, what it means is, as we inwardly dedicate, it strengthens our outward signal. So we're more likely to be danced into the plan of the larger thing that we're a part of, you know, and it is a renaissance, and Inanna's back, and, you know, who brought what, woof, woof, blessings, Aizan, the Amharic blessing, said reciprocal blessing back and forth for people setting forth on a dangerous, worthy journey, right? You know, Aizan, there we go. So there's that.